Funeral with a friend. Tricia headed back home to get dressed for the trip to Mason Brothers' funeral home in Adams County so she could pay respects to Annie Casey. She asked Glenn to come along earlier, but he told her that the worry viewing was all he could tolerate for the time being. She wasn't happy about her husband's decision, but she understood his feelings. Mason Brothers was smaller than most funeral homes. It was unusual for there to be two funerals in one week, much less two on the same day, so expansion to accommodate more business was deemed to be a waste of money. Arrangements for Annie Casey's viewing were inadequate due to the circumstances behind her death. It appeared as half the population of Manchester had come to pay their respects. It took Tricia 20 minutes to make it from the end of the line to the front door of Mason Brothers, and another 10 from the front door to the viewing room. She signed the condolence book and took a program containing Annie's obituary before looking to see if her protective shadow had somehow appeared. What she did see made Tricia's heart skip a beat. April Fowler. True, she was older, heavier, and more careworn than Tricia remembered her childhood friend, but it was April Fowler standing close to the open casket. Tricia scanned the obituary. April was listed as April Stone, Annie's grandmother. She looked over to her old friend again to notice the man standing next to her. He was a mountain of a man who kept a close eye on April and her interactions with the mourners. The line inched closer to the casket. Tricia noted that Annie wore the same type of high-necked dress chosen by the Worries to bury Betty. The dress was obviously chosen to hide the ring around Annie's neck caused by the garroting which killed her. She reached Annie's mother, a woman named Marie, gave her a quick, comforting hug. "I'm Patty Knox," she told the mother, hoping that April would overhear. April looked, dropping her jaw just enough for Tricia to confirm that this was her long-lost friend. At the same time, she signaled Tricia with a quick facial expression that something was not quite right. Tricia hugged April when she got to her and gave her a quick peck on the cheek, sensing that they might be watched. She then shook the husband's hand before making a beeline out of the room and into the hall. Within a minute, April was out in the hall with her. She caught Tricia's eye, nodded toward the restroom, then went in. Tricia followed, looking first to see if April's husband might be looking. She was standing at the vanity, waiting. "At best I have a minute before Edwin comes back to check on me," April hurriedly stated once the door closed behind Tricia. "He'd try to come into a women's restroom?" "He's been known to do that. Trust me, you'd best get in a stall and wait a minute before you leave, or he might know something's up." Tricia hastily tore off a piece of the obituary and started to scribble down her phone number. "Is it safe for you to call me?" "Sometimes, yes, but I never know when I'll have the chance. I'm a prisoner in my own home." April took the remainder of Tricia's copy of the obituary and borrowed a pen to jot down an address, which she gave to her old friend. "I need you to help me escape. Soon. Get here when you can," she said, handing the obituary back to Tricia. I'd have you take me with you now, but some of Russell's men are here. I can't risk it." April turned on the water in one of the sinks to wash her hands. "You need to get in the stall now. He'll be here any second." Tricia gave her friend a quick hug before going into one of the stalls. Moments later, there was a knock on the outer door. A man's voice demanded that April finish her business and get back to the receiving line. She shut off the water and left. After waiting a minute, Tricia flushed, washed her hands, and emerged into the hallway. She looked around to see if anyone had noticed her leaving the funeral home. "Don't turn around." A pair of hands rested on each shoulder, preventing her from wheeling around to face the man who had just told her not to turn around. He sounded like the man who addressed her when she was alone in the park a few days earlier. "April's an old friend of yours. We'll see that you have the opportunity to take her to freedom." "Who are we?" Tricia asked. "You'll know soon enough. Just be assured that if you were to arrive at her house when we tell you, she will be ready to go." The hands lifted from her shoulders. Tricia wheeled around as quickly as she could to try to get a glimpse of the man who stopped her. There were several people with their backs to her, waiting to get into the funeral home, but none of them appeared to be hiding from her. One gentleman looked back, winked, and looked away again. She could have sworn that it was the same man who shouted her at Betty Worry's funeral. Tricia called Sheriff Roy almost as soon as she reached her car. "The man you were talking to at Betty Worry's funeral was here at Annie Casey's funeral here in Adams County," she reported. "There's more," she continued once she gave Sheriff Roy a moment or two to absorb what she'd just told him. "An old girlfriend of mine was at the funeral. She was Annie's grandmother. She disappeared at some point between her 13th and 14th birthday and is now living as a prisoner in her own home. Now get this, my mystery man said something about mounting a rescue operation in the next week. Sheriff, I need to know if this guy is on the level. Can I trust him?" There was a long silence on the other end of the telephone. "Yes, you can trust him, Tricia. Just don't ask any questions. Not yet, at least. There's more to this whole deal than you need to know about for now." Rescue. Tricia returned to the building so that she could peek back into the viewing room to have another look at Edwin Stone. He was still a mountain of a man no one dared to challenge. "How in the hell is that woman going to get away?" she thought. Before she could close the door and return to her car, Philip Farmer approached Stone, said a few words, then started to leave with the grandfather. Tricia wheeled around to find a dark corner where she could hide from the pair. "You've been made." The voice belonged to the man who'd addressed her earlier, warning her of the presence of Russell's men. "You have maybe a minute to get in your car and vamoose. Head south, not north. A deputy will pull you over a few miles from here to give us time to figure out our next move." Farmer and Stone exited the viewing room and headed toward the back door of the funeral home. Luckily, they didn't notice her when they passed. Quietly, Tricia slipped out the front door, got into her car, then gunned it once she got back on the highway headed south. 3 miles later, she pulled up behind a sheriff's car parked in a schoolhouse driveway. He signaled her to follow him to park in the back. "Michaels?" the deputy asked when he approached her car. She nodded. "Just thought you'd like to know that several carloads of Russell's men are headed north on the main highway looking for you." The deputy handed Tricia a map with a route mapped out for her to take. "If you take this route I've mapped out, you should be able to get back to Magnolia with your passengers in one piece. "What do you mean by passengers?" Tricia asked. "You'll be taking your friend April Stone and her daughter Willow over to a Mrs. Collins in downtown Magnolia." Before Tricia could react, another sheriff's cruiser came roaring up. After a quick flurry of activity, Tricia was headed out with April and Willow along a route mapped out for them by the deputies. For the better part of an hour, the refugees did little more than to cry and give thanks for their deliverance. "David told us that you escaped," April mentioned at one point. "David who?" Tricia asked. "He told me that he helped you to escape too," she answered. "Was David back at the funeral home?" "Yes, you saw him, didn't you?" "Not today that I can recall." Tricia remembered the day when the young man came and exchanged cars with her mother. She would have gladly thrown herself at his feet and done whatever he would have told her. She was so grateful. "Did he give you a last name or where he might be?" she asked. "No, he didn't," Willow responded. "He only showed up a few days after Annie disappeared." Willow started to burst into tears again. "He told us where she was and what she was doing," April continued, "but I already knew because of what happened to me." April started crying, too. Bits and pieces of April's story came out during the rest of the drive. Her father borrowed a considerable amount of money from Gilbert's and had to pledge April to marry Edwin Stone. Her parents were moved away as part of a cover-up. When April's daughter, Willow, came of age, she was pledged to Jake Casey. "Annie wasn't pledged to no one, so her daddy sent her to work at the truck stops," Willow said, resuming the story. "One of Russell's men from Fuller County got mad when he found out that someone finally called to report that Annie was missing, so he killed her to make her an example." Do you know who it was? Could it have been Philip Farmer? He was at the funeral home, you know. Are you talking about that fellow running for sheriff over to Fuller County? It weren't him. He was the one who told us that Annie was dead, April explained. Tricia was simultaneously pleased and disappointed with April's revelation. She would have loved it if she were able to tie Philip Farmer directly into what amounted to a white slavery ring, but at the same time, she was disappointed that he wasn't. No one knows exactly who did it, but we hear that he chokes his victims, just like he did with my dear little Annie. Two girls with similar body art killed in the same way. We may have a serial killer on the loose, Tricia concluded without saying it out loud. When they arrived in Magnolia, Tricia pulled her car to the back of Zeke's. They were expected. Under the cover of darkness, Jessica Collins ushered in the refugees while Tricia kept watch, looking for... she wasn't sure. Just like the old days, Jessica was overheard as saying. You've done this before then, Tricia remarked while Jessica prepared a meal for the trio. We did this a long time ago when there was a need. I never thought that the need would arise again, she sighed. Did you know we were coming? Tricia asked. Oh, yes, Jessica told her while she was putting the finishing touches on his dinner salad. We were expecting company tomorrow night, but the call came that you were on your way, so we made adjustments. Who's we? Well, that would be telling. For the time being, the less you know, the more you'll find out. I know it sounds counterproductive, but trust me. Tricia smiled. There's a lot more going on behind the older woman than met the eye. Did Philip Farmer have a hand in any of this business? Philip Farmer's a certified jackass, Jessica interrupted. He's working for, we can't rightly say now, but it appears to us that he's working for someone connected with Russell's men. That could explain why he was at the funeral, Tricia postulated. It could also explain why that girl was murdered. It was a warning. Russell's men are at work again, or at least they're getting bolder. I'm afraid if something's not done, and if Farmer's elected sheriff, the young women of Fowler County could start disappearing again without a trace to be found.